everyone is like beating their same boring drum, and you come in and you're playing this awesome just jazz trumpet, right? You know how easy it is to spot you, right? Everything is a backdrop of gray and you're shining bright yellow.
Welcome to the One Person Business Podcast, the show for solopreneurs, consultants, and contractors who are ready to take charge of their business and reclaim their freedom. Join us as we bring you inspiring stories, invaluable insights, and practical strategies from successful solopreneurs and industry experts, empowering you to create a thriving business that aligns with your unique goals and allows you to live life on your own terms. Here are your hosts, Joe Rando and Carly Reese.
Welcome to the One Person Business Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Joe Rando.
And I'm Carly Reese.
And if that sounds backwards, it's because it is. We usually go the other way, but today I'm going to be your host. And the reason is that our guest today is somebody that, as I was just saying, I discovered, at least for our little group here, on the internet. And I'm just a huge fan of his work, of his podcast, and of his ideas. So I'm going to do the interviewing today. So instead of being in the peanut gallery piping in with the questions, I'm going to do the talking, and Carly can be the peanut gallery.
Dun, dun, dun.
So today, we are going to be talking with Jay Akunzo. And Jay is just an amazing guy. And with Jay, one of the first word that comes to my mind when I think about Jay is story. And he understands story. He understands the value of story. He knows how you should and should not use story. And that's what really got me engaged with him. And I think you're going to find this to be a really, really valuable listen in terms of determining how you can use storytelling to better promote your business, your offering as a solopreneur. So, Jay, welcome to the One Person Business Podcast. We're really glad you're here.
Thanks, Joe. To be associated with the word story is it's very meaningful. It is, because it's something that I care a lot about and have thought a lot about and try to teach it to a lot of people. So I appreciate the kind words.
So we're going to start off here with a question about creativity. And the question really is, it's really hard to maintain creativity when you're marketing, right? It's like, I mean, it's hard to maintain creativity when you're novel writing, but there's just a really big challenge for kind of coming back every day or every week with something creative and then using that to achieve measurable results in business. And there's the trade-off then between, you know, you get creative sometimes, but you miss the mark in terms of your business, or you hit your business on the nose, but it's just not that interesting. And, you know, talk a little bit about how you weigh those two things and keep the creative juices flowing without kind of going off the rails.
I think of it as, and the culture, unfortunately, I think, presses this onto us, even though I think it's inaccurate, which is that, like, oh, creativity means doing something big. And I just fundamentally disagree. Maybe someone else judges your work and goes, wow, you're really creative or you're really big. But I assure you, if people are judging my work and saying it's creative, I'm not sitting around all day writing or podcasting or giving a speech going, look at me being creative. I'm doing the work. I'm a craftsperson. And so I think like there's a hopeful message in that, which is if you think about how to master any craft, so you could be writing something in support of your business. You could be speaking on a podcast, yours or someone else's. You could be speaking to your team, quite frankly, or you could be speaking to a client. When you're executing anything communication-based, you want to be a master of that, right? You want to use your words to inspire action from others, which is what good storytellers do and what very creative people are prone to thinking about. And I think there's just three things to think about when you're thinking of mastering that craft. You know, like I'll take podcasting as a really easy example because we're on one right now and I host one and I love them. But how are you going to improve your podcast in support of your business? There's a million different things we think about, but I think we think about one above all, which is the process. It's like the workflow, the techniques, the tools that we can use to guide the work. And so people teach the process. Here is this technology you can use, or here is this interview question set that you can benefit from. It feels very externalized to us, like it's out there and I want to grab it and use it and graft it on somehow to my work. But it's really the other two things that make you a master of something and also help you separate, helps you differentiate, or helps others decide, oh, wow, you're creative. Like, I'm reacting to your work favorably. Like, this is different in a good way, not a stunt-like, unwelcome, or pushy way. The other two pieces of mastering a craft, any craft, are not the process, but the practice and the posture. So think of those three Ps again: process, practice, and posture. Process can come from someone else. It is the least you are the least required element of that, right? It's a checklist. But the practice is where the good stuff happens. It's where you should find your own process. It's me showing up every week to write an article, come hell or high water. Since 2005, I've written on the internet, and I've done so for me. It's been for me and me alone. And if others find it and like it, fantastic. But I'm not now thinking, how do I engineer this article to spread faster or do these things? I need a creative practice where I can get better. If you're trying to get fit, which is the, let's say, the fitness world version of you're trying to grow your business as a solopreneur, you're not going to just go and run the race. You're going to practice. You're going to go out for jogs. You're going to stretch. You're going to do these things. So why in the workplace is everything we're doing that feels like our work, quote unquote, the game or the race? It makes no sense to me. Find 10 minutes a week even, or 30 minutes a week, to ship something on a regular basis that explores ideas you care about relating to the work, but it is not itself the work. It is for you and you alone. I like to say I take I'm going to age myself here. I take a Mean Girls approach to creativity. So I love that.
What about new movie?
Up right now.
Talk about new movie Mean Girls.
On Wednesdays, we wear pink. Carly, you're familiar with the quote?
Oh, Jay, you're speaking my language.
All right.
Don't
worry. Let's take this somewhere. We're cooking now. On Wednesdays, we wear pink. Well, it's never really explained in the movie. Why do they wear pink on Wednesdays? Because it's a Wednesday. So for me, I write an every other week newsletter and I host an every other week podcast. The newsletter's Fridays and the podcast Mondays. Every other Friday, I write a newsletter. Why? Because it's every other Friday. So this is how I want people to think. It's not because I'm inspired. It's not because I'm feeling creative. It's not because this is the best idea I've ever had. It's not because like the world and my life and the coffee and this room. No, it's Friday. And on Fridays, we ship. So
Jay,
I take that Mean Girls approach.
You do realize that when we promote this episode on social and in our newsletter and everything, it will be alongside a Mean Girls meme, right? I just want to make sure you're aware. Okay.
I'm for it. Yep. I wouldn't have said it if I didn't know exactly what this was, which is recorded.
What the implication was, yeah.
So that's the practice. Like, are you putting yourself on a deadline, shipping a lot of work, which will then give you the skill set and the curiosity and the vision to make things that others deem creative? Because it's really not about how much time or how many resources you have at your disposal that decides if you're creative or not. It's how you use what you've got. You know, me and someone else given 5 hours to create a podcast episode, I like my chances. That's because I've made like an ungodly number of podcast episodes in my career. It's not because I was given some kind of gift at birth to be creative. So the practice is this piece that we don't think about when we think about being creative. And then the last one I think is even more important, which is simply your posture. So that's how you see yourself and the world. So I look around at my creative heroes. I think about, let's just take it to the business world. Friend of mine, Ann Handley, who writes a wonderful newsletter for marketers and gives tons of speeches every year. When she writes to you about marketing, it turns on light bulbs and you would deem that creative. And the way she writes is so tone of voice forward, you know, like AI could never do what she does. And her posture, the way she sees herself in the world, allows her to go shopping in Maine and observe a magazine sitting on the shelf and then say to herself, huh, that made me think of this thing that's starting to sound like the work that I do and the audience I'm teaching. And let me go back and write a piece involving a very simple observation that, by the way, any of us can make. Like, we're surrounded by these tiny little stories and moments of inspiration all over the place without adding magical amounts of resources or budget or finding some magical tool. You're just observing the world. And then you decide and have the vision to see this. Oh, I'm going to use that in my work. Which is such a wonderful competitive advantage. Again, others deem you creative, even if you're not feeling that way. The way I like to think about it is both artificial intelligence and humans are reliant on an LLM as their foundation. For AI, it's large language models, but for us, it's little life moments. And we're not pulling from those little life moments enough to inform the work. And doing so is not a matter of working with more resources, you're not working smarter, you're not working harder, you're just working more bravely. You're saying, oh, I observed something, and even if it's going to be metaphorical, not literally about the work that I talk about, I teach marketing, and you know, I'm not talking about a marketer, I'm talking about making coffee, I'm talking about keeping chickens in my yard, I'm talking about skydiving, whatever. I'm finding something in my little life moments that provides this delivery vehicle for an insight that they need to hear and won't forget. That is not a process thing. That's a posture thing. And that, to me, makes or breaks your ability to be creative or to be a storyteller, not the resources that you have.
So I want to chime in here really quick because you said the word of the year or the phrase of the year, AI, artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Where does that fall into story? Like, how do the LLMs work together? Can you expand on where AI falls into your daily practice with storytelling now, or does it?
I don't really use it because it doesn't solve a problem that I have. I think that's a tool that is very helpful for very many people, but I've put in so much work to try and master the process of writing that it's not overly useful. Now, the things that I use it for are, like, I'm not great at naming projects. And so I don't look for it to give me names. What I look for is for it to, like, wrestle with and observe things that I might be missing in my process. So I'll give you an example. Recently, I've been developing a new podcast. And to name that podcast, I basically said to the tool, here's a list of things I've named in the past that I'm proud of. What do you observe about these names? What do they have in common? Or what does each of them seem to do well? And the tool spits it out, right? I'm training now a chat thread here. And then here are a bunch of names from projects that are in my peer set or out in the world that I admire. And here's a brief description of all of them. What do these names have in common? Think about that. Okay, and it spits out a bunch of reactions. And so I trained it a little further. And then after that, I go, okay, here is this project I'm working on. It's a podcast. Here's a brief description of that podcast. Using what you just observed about the names I shared with you, staying in that arena, evocative of those names, give me 10 possible names for this podcast, and it spits it out. And then I say, okay, I like these two, so give me 5 variations on each of these, right? And I start to go down the rabbit hole. So it becomes this kind of wrestling partner. And the punchline of this little rant here is, what I found is the tool isn't as overly useful for people who are practiced, but it's useful for people who are practiced but have a piece of that job that either they don't love or don't excel at. But ultimately, it's for unblocking your imagination, not for outsourcing it, right? That's a really big line I draw. If you're writing whole pieces using ChatGPT and then sending that out to your audience, it's kind of like inviting your audience over for dinner and serving them what is McDonald's food, but on your own fine china, and then expecting them to clap because you cooked for them. It just doesn't make sense to me. There's so much that you don't include in that work. You don't know how to imbue that work with things that make it uniquely yours, which means it could have come from anybody, right? So congratulations. If you use it in lazy fashion, it's never been easier to be mediocre at scale. Like, you create commodity after commodity after commodity, which we've been doing in marketing for a long, long time. Now you're able to do it at greater scale. So it's the cost of that type of stuff is now at zero. And the value of that stuff is damn near zero too. So the question is not how to use the tool. The prime question to ask, and the tool can come later, is what am I saying to the world? Do I have a message? What is unique about my perspective? In other words, how do I get my creative fingerprints all over the work? And then if I need to clean it up or I need to get better at a piece of that work, once I understand how to imbue it with things that make it proprietary and unique and a personal thing that could only come from me, now let me use a tool to unblock parts of the process, not use the tool to replace that first stuff.
Your marketer's dream when it comes to a walking soundbite.
And also, I also am challenged on naming things and have used ChatGPT for just that. In fact, we just went through that naming a new product that we're coming out with. So
yeah,
I hear you. It's funny.
A friend of mine, Andrew Davis, calls it his doppelganger or his digital doppelganger. And he has several different doppelgangers where, you know, like for me, you can see over time, I'll have my naming chat thread on my naming doppelganger. So this is a version of me having put through lots of thoughts and opinions and preferences over time to train it, then having it basically be my naming collaborator. And then in a different chat entirely, I can go and do this task or that task, right? Here's the persona of my customer. And let me kind of wrestle, okay, given the persona further up the chat, here is this thing I'm trying to launch. What objections would this person have? That kind of stuff, right? What I see, the phrase generative is the most damaging possible word in naming these tools for people to adopt them correctly. Because first of all, it's not really generating stuff. It's synthesizing or, you know, outright stealing and plagiarizing. And second, it implies that the best use of the tool is production, producing work, writing the thing for you. That's really not what it's good for. as good as this assistive, almost like intern or second pair of eyes on something, it's really not meant to do the writing for you.
Totally agree. And I think you're going to see a whole lot of people that are mediocre or poor at writing get a little better just because they weren't good to start with. But I think you're going to see some good writers that are lazy get worse.
Yeah, and that's a good way to look at it. Yeah. And honestly, if you're someone who, you know, like me, really cares about craft and quality and serving the audience and emotional resonance, not just vanity reach, then I have to say to the world using these tools poorly, thank you. Like, instead of getting angsty about it and angry, like, thank you for creating this enormous and ever-growing waterfall of gray. Because if you know how to shine your specific color, people can find you a lot easier and thank you. They feel gratitude that you're doing it your way. If you shine your color up against a backdrop of gray instead of a little drip of gray. So the more junk that floods the internet, people are like, what are we going to do? They're hand-wringing and clutching pearls. Like, there's so much commodity content and there's so much noise and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yes, but everyone is like beating their same boring drum, and you come in and you're playing this awesome just jazz trumpet, right? You know how easy it is to spot you, right? Everything is a backdrop of gray and you're shining bright yellow. And there you are. It's easier to stand out. It's easier to resonate and connect emotionally with the right people. So yeah, to the people creating a lot of noise, it does make me a little angry, but for my work, I'm kind of like, thanks, you're making my job a lot easier.
See why I wanted him on the podcast?
I was
everybody
really about to say, Jay, you're quickly becoming my favorite person.
Okay, so I have a question. This is one that I hope I haven't crossed the line, but I want to make sure I don't.
Let's find it. Let's cross the line together.
Well, so a while back on your Unthinkable podcast, you did a thing where you started with, and forgive me, I'm paraphrasing here, but something like, I got up this morning like every other morning, and I read the three words I read to start every day.
Oh, the mug thing, yeah.
Yeah, and it totally got me. I'm like, wow, you know, I want to know what those three words, immediately want to know what those three words were. And I've been kind of, not plagiarizing it, but using that kind of stuff as an example for people for better ways to tell story in their content. And it totally got me. But then there's a question, which is, you know, that really got me and that was really interesting. But it's a lot of things that do that are almost, you know, called clickbait, right? That's not clickbait, but then there's clickbait.
Yep.
So where is the line between that kind of open loop, what you called it, storytelling and clickbait? How do you tread that?
So what we're talking about here is a storytelling device called an open loop, and people are falling all over themselves about like social media hooks. And this is not a new thing, right? It's like people talking about media marketing, meaning you make multimedia and you build an audience, you have shows, and I'm like, this is just media. This has been around forever and ever. Like, why do we in business have to label it something as if it's brand new? We're not that special, and we're usually late to the things that, you know, creatives elsewhere have mastered for centuries at this point. So an open loop is a storytelling device that creates a question on the mind of the audience that they can't wait till you close that loop. We're hardwired for the closure. So very macro level example, it's in the title, Game of Thrones. Who will win? Who will win the Game of Thrones, right? And then if you don't close it in satisfying fashion, you're like, oh, really? That guy? Like, I waited 10 years for that answer? And that's kind of
that would be lost, right?
What's that?
That would be lost.
Very similar. Like, okay, it's time for a new show. So it's very similar to clickbait in that way, although clickbait, it's much more immediate, where it's like, I am old enough to remember when BuzzFeed started and popularized that very overt type of clickbait, very abusive type of clickbait, you know, 17 things that every marketer is doing poorly in B2B today. Number five will blow your mind, right? Number five will blow your mind. The blow your mind thing was a very common clickbait tactic. Now, here's the problem with that. Never in the history of a list article has any of the numbers blown anybody's mind at all. Like, it's barely blown a single blade of grass, let alone a human being's entire intellectual power. So it's over-promising and under-delivering. That's what happens with clickbait. I saw an ad on some social network. It was probably LinkedIn or something about, you know, this many ChatGPT users and 99% are using it wrong. It's like, no, that's not true. Or I will share my secrets. So we're opening all these loops that have this really heightened sense of anticipation to them. I really want to know the answer to that question. And then the answer is not satisfying. And so now people dislike you. So congratulations, you grabbed their attention successfully. You have not held their attention nor converted it into someone who trusts you. It's like saying, you know, marketers get excited that like text SMS marketing has this insane open rate, right? Why does that matter? Like I could, if a marketer today, if I decided to dedicate my life's work on leap out of the bushes marketing, here's what you do. You hide in front of your prospects' homes, and when they're coming out in the morning, you leap out, right? And you go, blah, I'm going to sell you on something. That I would have a 100% look my way rate. But am I successful as a business owner or a marketer? No. So we're focused on the wrong things. It's not the open loop that makes storytelling successful. It's the fact that you open this loop to share with people, there's something you want to know, and I want to make that clear. It's coming up. And if you stay tuned, you'll get a satisfying conclusion, right? So an example of in my podcast, what I do is I start on, the show's called Unthinkable, and we examine unconventional choices that people make when they're obsessed with quality and creativity in their work, because they often break from best practices to then trust their own intuition. And the way we open the loop, it's the same structure every time. The audience doesn't know it. They're not overt segments. But we start by saying, Joe and Carly are podcasters. Here in general are the best practices that you see today among small business focused podcasters, right? So we build up what the best practices are and we make them seem smart or at least ubiquitous. And then we say, and here, you know, we introduce you to the guests, Joe and Carly, and you talk about something that seems completely antithetical to those best practices. And now the listener is going, that's really unthinkable, right? Oh my gosh, why would they do that? That's an open loop, but it's implied. I don't say, and you're never going to believe what they did. So really, really adept storytellers allow the open loops to kind of subtly recede into the nooks and crannies of the way they communicate. And then later in the episode, you find out, oh, Joe and Carly are actually strategic people. They looked at this information and this desire and this scenario, and that's why they did it this way. And maybe we should think more like them and trust ourselves, not some generic best practice, right? So when you're trying to be more overt about it, you run the risk of overselling it. Because then if I'm like, you're never going to believe, I'm on the spectrum of number five will blow your mind. So there's all these subtle ways to do it. And you hinted at the mug one, which is like in the morning, I talked about how to tell a story that grips people. And imagine I said, in the morning, I woke up and got my coffee as usual. Really nothing that is going to keep your attention there. But if I said, in the morning, I went down to my kitchen and I reached for the mug that had the five words I always love reading every morning. And if I just pause for a beat, you're implicitly going, what does the mug say? I have done nothing sensational. I've done nothing really that interesting. There's nothing groundbreaking about that story or that morning, but the way I articulate it is a respectful form of an open loop, because then in the next line, I'm going, the mug says this, right? So I'm like purchasing little moments of your attention and then giving you the satisfying payout of the open loop or closing the loop in a way that is not disappointing.
Cool.
So funny, because I'm like, I have to go find this post so I know the five words.
Oh, it's a podcast, so.
Well, I'll listen to podcasts.
I'll point it out to you. So let's talk a little bit about empathy, right? Because, okay. You know, obviously we're creating content for our business and we're communicating with people, hopefully mostly people that potentially, you know, are going to want to do business with us, or at least some of them will. And, you know, we were talking about ourselves. So, but the idea then is that if you don't show empathy in your content for the people that you're communicating with, obviously it probably can't resonate as well. And can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you, I mean, you're kind of like doing a masterclass here, and I honestly don't belong in the class, but, you know, just talk a little bit about how empathy, you know, how you channel empathy for the people that you're targeting with your content.
Yeah. The way, one of the missing pieces in a lot of business focused content. Now that might mean I talk about business and work related topics, or it might mean that I'm running my business and I teach yoga or, you know, eating healthy or whatever. And so the topics are not business, but I'm using the content to support my business. One of the missing ingredients seems to be having some kind of premise. We just get taught, we just talk topics. It's like topic. It's like everyone else is also talking about those topics. So unlike everyone else talking about these topics, what do you do uniquely? And it can't be a game of comparisons. It can't be like, oh, only I get practical. Only I talk to inspirational people. Because other people will say, but I do that too. Even if you're thinking, oh, my competitors don't do it well, they would still lay claim to it. And so really great idea development, really great premise development. You know, think of a comedian. You're making an assertion, right? You know, it's like, you ever notice toddlers always interrupt you when you're having a serious conversation? That's not a story. That's also not a joke. That's just an assertion I'm making. And then I set it up with a joke afterwards. It's a premise for the joke. Well, we should have a premise for a project. Unthinkable. You should trust yourself more than best practices. Trust your intuition more than conventional thinking. Song Exploder from Hrishikesh Hirway. Wonderful podcast. Breaks down one track with a musician. So Madonna does not tell her whole backstory on that show. She breaks down one track and piece by piece tells the story of how she made it. Why? Well, unlike Unthinkable's pitch that I just gave you, it's a more hidden premise or hidden assertion the host is making. He believes that to understand a musician's greatness and to understand music overall means you should look harder at the small choices they make, not the big moments in their life, right? So there's an assertion there that informs the content, makes the content feel original. And when you pitch your idea or pitch your premise, you're trying to pitch it from the place of empathy that you hinted at, Joe. You know, I think about, if I were to pitch Unthinkable, I'd be like, let me just talk to marketers narrowly, because my show speaks to everybody broadly, but you're a marketer. And for years, you were really excited about being creative and producing work that only you can create. But over the years, you found that you're just getting bombarded by all these trends and best practices and blueprints. You're getting shoulded to death. You have near-term goals conflicting with your long-term aspirations. I'm just agitating the pain, right? I'm using this source of tension you feel, like pulling a rubber band in one direction, and I'm going to snap you back towards now some solution. Well, is it possible to get off this content hamster wheel? How do we build something we're proud of and something we do our way while also driving actual business? You know, is it an exhausting race to just beat somebody else at the same game we're all playing? Or can we stand up and do something original and unique and rewarding, right? Well, I'm Jay Akonzo. Join me on this journey where we're trying to understand how we trust ourselves more than conventional thinking. We're telling stories of people who made the leap between what best practices said they have to do and what their intuition was urging them to try. And what we'll discover is that it wasn't a leap at all. In fact, it's only unthinkable from the outside looking in. Right? So that sounds like kind of a trailer or something like that. But in Hollywood, that's called an empathy statement. An empathy statement is literally just, I'm going to address one person in my audience. I'm going to say, you're this and you're like this. Okay, you've self-identified. This is for me. Then I'm going to say, and then you struggle with this or want this. And then this stuff gets in the way. And then here's some big open-ended questions we share. Now I'm going to invite you to come with me on this journey of my newsletter, of my podcast, of my overall brand, as I look to change something that you want changed. And the change I'm prescribing is my perspective. It is a solution, not the solution, which you might disagree with. But if you do agree with it, or at least you're intrigued by it, it's going to be very for you. So I've set it up with addressing who you are and all the problems you have. None of that is unique. I'm now in a genre or an industry or a category or a niche, but my perspective on what to do about it is unique, right? And that's where the empathy comes in. It's, I've heard you. I understand your pain and who you are and what you're dealing with. And I'm here with a proposed solution you have not considered. And that's the difference between someone who creates just commodity junk and someone who really has empathy, who goes, listen, I know this is what you're dealing with and this is what you think you want, but I'm here to propose something that you need. And I'm articulating in a way from your perspective that leads you every step of the way that you need to walk to arrive at the conclusion of, this is the change. This is the solution. This is where I already am. I'm not just saying, stop that, do this. I'm hitting all the beats I need to so that I'm coming at it from where you're at and then leading you to where I want you to be. To me, that's the definition of empathy.
Meeting them where they are and then bringing them along. Yep. That's... My wife's a child therapist, and she says the same thing with the kids and their parents. Meet them where they are. So interesting.
Yeah, it's basically awesome. Like giving a keynote everywhere you go in not so many terms. Like, good keynotes walk up onto the stage with some kind of big how to think change in mind, but they don't start with it. They start with like, hey, you know this goal you have? That's the goal, right? Yeah, everyone agrees. Okay, cool. We're aligned. I have your best interests at heart. And you know how we're coming at it looks like this? People go, yeah, I am doing that. Well, here are some problems with that. And here is a change to fix those problems. And here's a story or two that illustrates what it looks like. And then here's a methodology so you can do it, right? I'm leading you every step of the way from where you're at to where I want you to be.
Awesome.
You know, it's so funny, Jay, the way you talk is like a storyteller. And I have found myself during this interview getting closer and closer to the screen. as I get more and more engaged in what you're saying, because I'm just so captivated. And literally, I just took a step back because I was like, oh my gosh, I'm like right up against the camera.
So could you share some practical tips for content creators and marketers that want to tell more compelling stories? Just some kind of, you know, best practices, which I know you kind of go against, but what are Jay Akunzo's best practices for not doing best practices?
I think like make things your own. That's the message why I attack best practices. Don't just take generic advice. You know, make it your own. Use the variables from your own specific situation, including what you can do and how you do it, most importantly. You know, the who behind your content matters more than ever before. A lot of storytelling advice looks like a narrative. Like, I got to go tell a narrative, right? The storytelling advice is rooted in the culture of literature and film and all these things, which we can totally learn from and should. I'm much more interested in, without magically adding resources or spending hours of your day, you know, studying someone that you love, some auteur, like, how do you, in the next piece you're writing, improve, like, raise the impact of that piece? Get off the content hamster wheel, create things that at once are more valuable to others and more original to you. How might we go about that? And there's a really simple storytelling structure that I love. So there's just three parts to it. And the third is the missing piece in so many ways we communicate as entrepreneurs and marketers. So the three parts are, number one, this happened. Number two, which made me realize. And number three, and here's the really important piece. It's the tipping point from talking about anything you want to talking about what they want. And that's the thing about the topic I'm teaching you, the insight I'm giving you. This happened, which made me realize, that's the thing about topic plus insight. So here's a really easy example. Let's say, and I'm looking at this mug I have here, this little like red stripe on the top. It's like, it's reminding me of this. Let's say I wanted to teach people to stop doing all this unnecessary research and following all the experts and buying all the courses and buying all the books in advance of doing a thing and say, please just do the thing, right? I'm kind of like the Nike slogan. I'm looking at my audience going, just do it. Or I'm a reporter. Studies show that in general, we're not afraid of the task that we're actually over-researching. We're afraid of doing something that's new, right? Anyone could say it this way. And in fact, many people have. You're a commodity. And the only way to win if you have a commodity is you got to reach somebody before everybody else saying the exact same stuff does, because you're all the same. And it's an exhausting and a very expensive and inefficient way to go to market. But what if instead I had the same goal? I wanted to teach you that lesson. But in my writing or my podcast or wherever I'm showing up, I did this instead, using that previous structure I mentioned. This happened, which made me realize that's the thing about. So for years, guys, this is actually a true story, by the way. For years, even though I have an espresso machine in my home, I did not make espresso. I was afraid of it. Same for you, Joe? Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. I know. I love espresso.
Oh, me too. I'm Italian. It's embarrassing, really. Like, look at, like, if anyone can see me or look at me on the internet, gel, hands, I'm inescapably Italian. It was embarrassing that I did not make my own espresso. My wife, who's not Italian, would make it for herself. And every time I saw her going up to the machine, I'd be like, babe, can you make it for me? Please, can I have one? It was embarrassing. Today, though, I make it every single day. I'm literally showing you, for those who are not watching, this mug. There was espresso in this earlier today. I make it every day. So what changed? I tried making it once. Okay, this happened. That's all I just did. Well, and when I made it that one time, it made me realize, oh, I wasted a lot of time doing all this research, following the espresso influencers, asking my wife, like outsourcing it to her, or just not doing it. Because once I made it once, I was like, that wasn't that scary. Also, if I messed up, it was easy to clean up. Or if I had to do some research, it was more focused and productive research, not endless, open-ended, needless research, right? And that's the thing about trying new things. Typically, and studies will validate this, we're not afraid of the task itself. We're afraid of the unknown. And if that's true, then rather than do all this research and follow people and outsource it or skip it, what we should do is move quicker to make the unknown known. Whatever it is you're thinking about, try it once. Because typically then you don't need the research, or if you do, it's much more focused and productive because you know a specific question to ask or a sticking point where you got stuck, right? So that's the same message. I didn't have to go and like live some, you know, travel hopping plane to plane and meeting fancy people and experiencing things and starting billion-dollar businesses life. It's literally me in my kitchen every day. It's an observation pulled from my LLM, my little live moment, and it's more impactful. It feels like It's valuable. I'm giving you an insight that you can use, and it's a sticking point. It's like, oh, I'm going to remember that because the delivery vehicle was memorable, not commodified. And it's original. It's personal to me. So you learned something about me, or there was a perspective I had that you shared. And key to all of this is, even if you don't care about coffee or like coffee, or you can't stand when people talk about coffee, there was something I was going through in the coffee story that you were relating back to your own world of like, yeah, I've really been trying to master this thing, and I am also agonizing over it and doing too much research. Because that's really where a story connects. It's not the action or the topic, it's the emotional stakes. So that same goal, same constraints, same type of content. All I'm asking you to do is say, in my personal life, this happened, which made me realize this thing, this idea sparked by what happened. And that's the thing about the topic I'm here to teach you and the insight I'm here to give to you.
So let me just expand on that one question that I have on that.
Yeah, is please.
That there's this concept of best practices, or, you know, I mean, if you talk about writing, there's just certain things about writing that kind of are accepted as things that you should know or do, and, you know, spelling and, no, but seriously, you know, just things that are generally considered best practices. And I'm going back to when I was a teenager and I was in a rock band, and we said, we have our own style. So we would kind of learn all these cover songs, but never really learn them right.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't that good. And we kind of said, well, it's our own style, you know, and it wasn't very good. But then we finally said, well, you know what, maybe we should learn what they're doing, get that down, and then change it, which worked out a lot better.
Yeah.
Because now we were starting from a place of expertise instead of just hacking. I'm just curious, any thoughts on that in terms of, you know, kind of weighing that kind of basic skill set against, you know, you're doing it your way, your own way, your original way?
It reminds me of this guy, Mike Brown. He's an entrepreneur in upstate New York who runs a very successful coffee brand today called Death Wish Coffee. It's the world's strongest coffee, Death Wish. It's like 2.5 times the average caffeine content per cup. So when Mike started, he wasn't building an online brand or an e-commerce brand. He was building a single location coffee business in Saratoga Springs, New York. And he had no clue about coffee. And he was trying all these best practices and, you know, all these different things were not working. It was like a glut of attempts to make the business work because he was just grafting out of his business all these expert things. Most notable was every coffee expert said the bean you want to use is called an Arabica bean. It's floral and delicious and aromatic. And now that you know this phrase, if you haven't heard it before, you'll see it all over coffee, Arabica beans. It's like heralded as the bean you want to use. There's sort of the enemy to that is Robusta, which is often frowned upon as like kind of more rubbery or chemically. It's not quite as, you know, the craftspeople in coffee don't love it as much. And it's found in a lot of instant coffees, Robusta. Well, what Mike failed to realize, and then he caught up, was, hold on a sec. My customer is not Jay trying to write the next book next to some exposed brick with a coffee he sips luxuriously thinking about art. My customer in upstate New York is a construction worker, a firefighter, people who were hard chargers, blue collar workers primarily. And as you start to research Saratoga Springs at the time, all their demographic data actually points to this firsthand qualitative insight of Mike's, because it was one of the few towns that was building. So all these people flooded to the town, and Mike had just observed, this is who's coming into my shop. And they reach for coffee like a Red Bull or a 5-hour. That's my competitor, not these artisanal coffee brands, right? Or other coffee shops. And so he's like, I'm going to use Robusta because there's way more caffeine in a Robusta bean once roasted than Arabica, which loses more of its potency. So a coffee expert would have said, don't ever do that. And Mike, just looking at his firsthand world, figured out that he should. And so what this taught me, or what this showed me, was Mike's use of Robusta started primarily because he just looked at his firsthand situation and figured out what worked for him and his customers. And I think if you don't have a clue how to write, fine, invent your own damn rules, misspell everything, start every sentence with a preposition, which is frowned upon, you know, use the Oxford comma or don't. Spoiler alert, we're going to fight if you don't. But far be it from me to tell you what to do, because the only thing that matters in writing is not that you uphold any kind of rule. It's that when people read it, they get it and they get you. Do they get what you're trying to say? And do they actually learn something, not just about themselves and the words, but also about you, so that they come back for more or think highly of you? right? So that you start to inspire action from your audience. That's it. If there are really any rules to writing, that is it. Did they get it? And do they get you now?
Jay, you subconsciously just know your audience so well at this point that you had no idea you were talking to two crazy coffee lovers on this episode. That was the perfect example to use because Joe and I are both coffee addicts. And so just subconsciously, you just know how to talk to your audience.
I love it. I just got that vibe. Also, I did a three-part documentary series before the pandemic called Against the Grain. I partnered with a brand called Help Scout. And I got to go up to Death Wish's office and do a multiple-day shoot around their company and around their town. And they were shoving full mugs of their product at me for on-camera work. And what you won't see if you go to jayaconzo.com/ATG for Against the Grain, ATG, you won't see in the episode me vibrating violently off camera. It was insane levels of caffeine.
Okay, we are running out of time here, so I want to make sure we get these last two things in. The first one, your favorite quote about success.
I don't think I have a favorite quote about success. I have a favorite quote about successful storytelling, if I can offer that.
That's
Please.
Fair enough.
In 2017, author Kazuo Ishiguro accepted the Nobel Prize in Literature. And he said, stories are like one person saying to another, this is how it feels to me. Can you understand what I'm saying? Does it also feel this way to you?
That's awesome.
I love that.
I saw that, yes. And then lastly, how do people find you if they want to learn more about you?
Yep. It's very simple, jayaconzo.com for my books, my newsletter. I write an every other week newsletter to help you become a stronger storyteller. That's probably the best project I can offer folks listening. Or we're listening to a podcast here. Unthinkable is the name of the show. And that's where I talk to other people and collect their stories. And actually right now, we're going through a mini series where I'm bringing on world-class storytellers who are in the business world. So business storytellers, and they're all bringing one of their signature stories that they use somehow to grow their business. And they're breaking it apart, talking about how they came up with the story, how it's constructed, what's working, what's not working, how to improve it, and then how they use it to grow their business. So the show is called Unthinkable, but the current mini series feels really perfect for this conversation.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Thank you.
Well, like curveball question. How do we schedule 45 minutes with you every single day so that we can just have this kind of chat?
You can bribe me with espresso. There it is.
There we go. Okay, we figured it out. Cracked the code.
Very good. Well, Jay, thanks so much. This was fantastic. And I will be looking forward to seeing you sometime, somewhere, or at least listening to you on Unthinkable.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And so take care. We'll talk soon.
And listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. We will see you next week on the next episode of the One Person Business Podcast. Talk to you soon.
You may be going solo in business, but that doesn't mean you're alone. In fact, millions of people are in your shoes, running a one-person business and figuring it out as they go. So why not connect with them and learn from each other's successes and failures? At LifeStar, we're creating a one-person business community where you can go to meet and get advice from other solopreneurs. Be sure to join in on the conversations at community.lifestar.com. That's community.lifestar with two R's.com.